Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. With coronavirus cases spiking upwards, both here in the state and most of the country, it seems unlikely that Americans will be able to gather again anytime soon to listen to music in a concert hall, arena, or auditorium. But we are seeing more and more innovative ways to put on a show. Drive-in shows, virtual concerts, where musicians record in one location and send out the performance via the internet. Or virtual concerts, if you will, where performers are also virtual in creating the music. But what of the traditional performing arts? To hear musicians performing acoustically or singing communally. Today, we'll speak with two local art administrators on how they're working to present music to their audiences this fall. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Tim Sharp, who leads the Tulsa Chorale, but also is the executive director of the National American Choral Directors Association, on how choral singing can even take place in a COVID world. Tim actually survived a mild case of COVID-19. But first, we'll hear from Tulsa Symphony Orchestra Executive Director Keith Elder on how the Tulsa Symphony is planning to present music this fall. Keith Elder, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, thank you for having me on.
First, I have to ask, how are your musicians and how is the symphony doing in a time when you can't make music?
It's a challenging time for everybody. You know, we have not been on stage together as an orchestra since, I think it was March, right before the Star Wars, when we had to cancel everything. And so for the orchestra, you know, we're very fortunate to have wonderful donors that have been able to support us. We've gotten funding through the PPP and the CARES Act, which has been able to help so that we could compensate musicians for our April and May performances that we didn't perform. But the ripple effect is huge. Our musicians have lost a lot of all their summer employment. They've lost teaching, although some of them are working on online lessons. And so this is a challenging time for all. For everybody in this country. So.
And, of course, the independent contractors, which most of you musicians are, they've had the worst trouble in getting unemployment compensation.
Yes, which creates a little bit of a challenge because our musicians are employees to this organization, but they act as independent contractors for a lot of other work they do here. And when you think of all the shows that come through BOK or the Broadway shows or all the music and arts that happen around here, the church music, the weddings, a huge piece of income is lost during this crisis right now for our musicians. And it's hitting hard, and it's not something that somebody could have planned for.
Back when the state economy first opened up, the Tulsa Symphony announced a new season for the coming year that looked in many ways like COVID never happened. And I know that was some time ago. That was some time ago when
sure.
Yes, cases were very low in Oklahoma.
Yep.
But now things have changed a bit. And as you know, we're starting to see the first virtual music concerts are occurring in the pop music world. But how does a acoustic music group, an arts group like the Tulsa Symphony, envision performing in a way both safe to musicians and audiences here in the coming year? What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. So, Rich, we're looking at moving forward, and we're looking at plans of performing in the fall. And we've been working closely with, you know, Tulsa Public Health, with doctors, looking at different research, talking with different doctors from around the country of how to do this safely. Because the important piece of all of this is going to be safely and responsibly. You know, we're going to be announcing the first week of August our plans, but our plans are going to be, we're going to be performing as an orchestra in a safe way. I can tell you a couple of things. One is that we will be requiring masks of our audience and of the musicians that are non-wind players. Social distancing will be important. And how we're going to achieve that, we're working through right now. You know, we're working with our musicians. You know, we're looking at different studies. The Fort Worth Symphony did a concert on July 4th without an audience, but with the orchestra. And we've gotten their protocols. And, you know, what everybody's finding is masks and social distance is so important. This is going to be the new norm for the coming year. And so we need to figure out how to safely be able to provide music for this community, because this community really needs the comfort and the healing power of music and to come together for concerts.
What do you know about the risk just to the members of an orchestra of performing together in the way we expect to see an orchestra, with the string sections sitting together with two people on a stand there with the winds together? What do we know about the risk of that? Is there any research out there?
There's a lot of research out there. There's a lot of orchestras doing items. You know, the biggest challenge right now is musicians will not be sharing music stands. They'll be all on their own music stands. You can still do a 6 to 9 foot, depending on social distance between all players. You need a little bigger of a stage, and we're working through that. You know, one of the items that we're looking at is whether this would be an outdoor event, which we're finding outdoors is better than indoors, and that, you know, the non-wind and brass players would be using masks, even during the concerts, as well as the conductor. I've been in contact with the Concertgebouw Orchestra in Amsterdam, did a live stream, and they had a socially distant orchestra, and it worked from their perspective, from their research. The United States West Point Band has been performing, and they have a protocol that they've been using with socially distant. On the winds and brass, the big culprit, unfortunately, is the flutes and how to deal with the flute. So what's going to be different this coming fall is going to be sort of the layout of the orchestra. Having your traditional winds sort of in rows behind each other is going to not happen. They're going to be in more of a one row. There's going to be distancing. The flutes are not going to be next to each other. They're going to be sort of behind, so they're on the far end. And this is all stuff that we've been looking at from many different studies. There have been studies going on all over the world. And so the important thing is, one, to have our musicians safe, because we can't do a concert unless our musicians are safe.
Right. Now, I've seen some of the military bands who have had to perform all through this whole pandemic. Some of them have come up with like a system of shields around each player. It's almost like they're in their own little universe. Are you thinking about that?
There will be some shields, yes. There have been some shields. And there have been a lot of people saying, well, you can't play that way. But, Rich, you know, as a musician, a lot of time that's how recordings happen. And that's how recording studios are. You're sort of in your little isolation area on the stage. So, you know, there will be some shield. Will every musician be shielded? No. But the mask and the social distancing is going to be so important as we weather this crisis. And that's going to go also with our audience and our patrons and making sure that we can find a space and a venue that's going to be workable, that we can have a socially distanced audience and can have an audience that can enjoy live music. I think we all have screen fatigue from watching so much on our computer screens.
And we're running out of things to watch, actually, at this point. So protecting musicians is one part of the equation. Mm-hmm. How do you protect audience members? And how do you present a concert sustainably in a hall where, you know, you're socially distancing?
Sure. And that's what we're looking at. Is it means that we're going to have to potentially go to a bigger space, and we're going to maybe have to be outdoors, or we might have to be, because there's a couple of pieces. One is going to be a socially distant audience, which means, you know, at least a 6-foot space around groups of people. When I say groups that come together, enough entrances and exits, handicap accessible, so people don't have to get in elevators. And so we're working and looking at all of that, and we're going to be very excited in the first week of August to sort of explain all of that. But the details are coming together. Making it mandatory that people wear masks, and we'll provide them. Making it so that there's going to be hand sanitizer for people to wash their hands and do that, and socially distance. I think with those three things, that has been a common theme from pretty much every disease and medical professional I've talked to, that is what we need to be doing as we're living in the new norm of this COVID.
Now, it's interesting. You brought up a point that I really hadn't thought about. You know, as much as it's about sitting in an audience together, it's coming into the auditorium or the space and leaving the space, because that's where people bunch up greatly. I'm thinking, are you going to have like ushers like you have at a wedding or a funeral where it's like, you know, everybody leaves and comes in by row?
No, I don't think so. But I mean, if you think about, you know, we're going to grocery stores and people just need to be responsible, where you're keeping a distance between the person in front of you and you're not crowding the person, and everybody is taking their own personal responsibility to make sure there's adequate space between the person in front of you and the person behind you. And then, as the research is showing, I was reading another story this morning, wearing masks helps that even further.
Yeah.
And so those are some things that we're looking at. We will be performing. There will be some changings of our repertoire for the fall. I can say that right now because, you know, I haven't come out publicly, and this will be the first time here, but Mahler 1 is going to be a major challenge to do socially distant. It's too big of an orchestra. So we're going to be looking at what we could do to replace the Mahler 1 concert in November. But it's that sort of thing that we're looking at. We've been in conversations with soloists. We've been in conversation with conductors. We've been in conversation of how to get them here safely, all of those pieces. And then the other for the patron that's going to be important is that, you know, we have a policy at the orchestra this year that there's no risk. Buy a ticket now. If you don't feel comfortable, we'll give you a refund before the concert happens. Or if we have to cancel, you'll get a refund. It's not like we're going to be saying, you're buying a ticket and we're going to postpone it till next year and you won't get a money back. If we cancel, you'll get your money back. If you don't feel comfortable, we'll refund your money.
Now, I've seen, you've probably seen this as well, there was something publicized by the Boston Symphony where they were envisioning Symphony Hall socially distanced, which, you know, reduced their capacity from like 2,000 plus down to about 300 people. Half the orchestra was actually on the side mezzanines playing from there, but to socially distance because of the size of their stage and the like. You know, are you looking at that sort of capacity requirements where it's
We are not. Are looking, that's why I'm saying we're potentially looking outdoors or looking at big facilities. You know, and, you know, whether it's outdoors or in a bigger space, because right now, and we're working with the PAC on all of this, because there are challenges making sure that we can be socially distant there. But we need to make sure that we can get an audience. You know, we've sold tickets. We've sold almost 700 tickets so far for opening night. And so people are wanting to come to concerts. And so we need to make sure that we're providing a space that is big enough to be able to accommodate safely an audience. And that's the key word. And your comment about Boston Symphony, I worked many years there. Almost 20 years there. And I that's why I chuckled, because I've had conversations with them about this. And I think with this industry, we're just going to have to think differently this year. If we're going to perform, it's going to be in spaces that are not your typical concert space. And they're just going to, it's just going to be different.
Are you thinking, based on where we are in this pandemic, a concert with a full orchestra may change to a small chamber group? Ideas on the table at this point?
Yeah, I mean, all ideas are on the table right now. But I think right now what we're looking at is wanting to play a celebration of Beethoven with Beethoven 7 and Beethoven Piano Concerto in September with an orchestra, working with the health department, because we need to get them to sign off on our plans.
Yes. And any group over, 500 people, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're in conversations with them about our plans and what we plan on doing, because we want to make sure that this is something that's going to be safe for the city, but that we are still moving forward providing the music. And, you know, music is so essential to a community. And, you know, this is going to be really important as we're moving forward over the fall with that. Am I saying no to chamber music? I'm not, but what I am saying is our vision right now is that we would be moving forward with at least a Beethoven-sized orchestra.
You mentioned earlier with the socially distanced orchestra, will technology play a bigger role? You know, you talked about, you know, how in a Broadway pit, everybody is separated, but they're also wearing headphones. They're listening to a mix of the orchestra. Do you anticipate that the orchestra will have to up their technology to be able to?
We're in those conversations right now. Exactly. Uh-huh. Yes. And as we're looking at being outdoors, if we're outdoors, it might be amplified. Or if we're in a bigger space, it might have to be amplified. And we're in conversation with some of the top classical music sound engineers as to how to make that all happen. You know, when I said I've been with the Boston Symphony for many years, I've got the luxury of having contacts with some of the top classical music sound engineers. These are engineers that do New York Philharmonic at, you know, Central Park, or have toured with the Boston Pops. And that's the direction we're looking at, because sound is going to be so important for these concerts, that this orchestra needs to sound as beautiful as this orchestra plays.
Keith Elder is the executive director of the Tulsa Symphony. Is today on Studio Tulsa, we look at how concert music can return in a COVID world. Well, as difficult as the challenges may be for instrumental musicians, they're even more difficult for vocal performers. The story of a Skagit County, Washington choir where a single asymptomatic case spread to 80% of the choir after just one rehearsal is fairly well known. As executive director of the American Choral Directors Association, Tulsa Chorale Artistic Director Tim Sharp has been hearing from a lot of experts on how singers, from choral groups to operatic or Broadway performers, can sing together safely. Sharp, who is a survivor of COVID-19 himself, joins us today to discuss what he's learned. Tim Sharp, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. It's great to be with you as always.
And as I have to, just before we start, congratulations on surviving COVID-19. I know you and both your wife were infected and had relatively mild cases, but I'm glad you're up and around and better. We just heard about some of the difficulties surrounding playing acoustic music from an instrumentalist perspective. The very notion of vocal ensembles performing together in a COVID world seems pretty hard to believe. As a choral director, what's your best guidance?
It is very devastating to us, of course, because what we do and what we insist upon with diction, with good breathing, with an energetic approach to singing has turned out to be the very thing that makes these aerosols go out from our lungs and from our bodies. And we've learned, of course, now that aerosol seems to be the transmitter. So singing has become and talking, or in the reason we social distance and the reason we can't be in rooms together is because we communicate with each other. So while not picking on singing specifically, it is at the heart of the issue for what we do. So it has been devastating for us, and we're going through this right now as we reboot and rethink about how we're going to approach the fall and our seasons. And of course, not just us, Rich, you know, it's audiences. There's a lot of stagehands that make their living supporting what we do. The industry is quite large, but listen, the performing arts have been devastated by it. But I have to turn around and say we are ramping up. We're trying to head on, and we're also I'm looking at it as a new opportunity to learn new skills. I mean, my mindset is I'm not just doing this for a moment. I'm trying to regroup and reboot so that I can be prepared to bring in new skills and new media and new ways of doing things that's going to improve us and expand our audience. Frankly, it's not just motivation or positive thinking. I think it's just, for me, it's a reality of a new mindset of moving forward and using this as an opportunity. And so I'm actually, even though I experienced COVID myself, I am now grateful for an opportunity to move into a whole new way of thinking and doing things with the great hope that therapeutics and vaccines are on their way.
So the new way of thinking and doing things, does that mean choral singing, vocal singing takes place virtually, or can it be in person in the right situation?
It is showing, and I believe this is coming from science, and everything I've decided to do is going to come from scientists. You know, there's no political agenda for me at all in this. It's all about health for my singers. I mean, we choral people have been concerned about singers' health our entire careers, so I'm not going to suddenly stop right now for this momentary inconvenience, but I'm looking at science. So what the science is saying is this: outside rehearsals are possible, that outside are even inside rehearsals in which windows and doors can provide really good ventilation and strategies that blow air away from singers. because if it's blowing on other singers, this is the exact problem that we're trying to avoid. But if the air blows away from singers and there's ventilation in the room, that there is a scenario in which we can get back together. But the other caveats are this whole distancing issue is serious. It means we cannot be in the proximity that we were in the past. You know, 6 feet has been the minimum. I would go for larger than 6 feet away from each other. Also, we've often sung in curved or mixed formations and all sorts of things like that. I'm seeing that we can't do that. We have to sing in straight lines, and we have to, with those ventilation and distancing issues also at work. Masks are not an inhibiting factor for singing. You can sing with a mask, although they're not comfortable. And some people have challenges with a mask on for a long period of time. But masks are absolutely going to be a part of the equation right now. And I will insist that we sing with masks, and that when we're not singing, we're not talking, we're not doing extracurricular things within the rehearsal, we're not socializing. Those kind of things that build community, I'm sorry, they're going to have to be done in some sort of way, but we just can't do the kind of physical activities that we did in the past. We're going to have to keep the distance. We're going to have to rehearse in ventilated areas or outside areas, and that 6 feet or more is paramount in our thinking. Also, I'm even working at putting my sections or smaller groups in different locations, because the other thing that we're seeing is you should not be in the same room for a long period of time. So I'm going to reduce the amount of rehearsal time and amount of time people are even in the room at the same time. So it's going to be very small sections in different rooms, spaced out with masks and with good ventilation, eliminating extraneous activities.
So it sounds to me like you believe that we can go back to choral singing, at least with some modifications, with the infection, the possibility of infection out there.
Yes, I believe what the scientists are saying is that there's no risk-free environment. They're not suggesting even that is risk-free. And that's an important caveat. Every piece of literature I've seen from the Journal of Voice, the Colorado studies that are coming out right now that we've helped finance with our organizations, all of these studies, one of the first thing they say is we are unable to test this using live viruses. It's just not possible for us to do that. So in that sense, Rich, we're participating in an experiment. And one person has said we're just one large, you know, guinea pig experiment. But this is coming from the scientists in the Journal of Voice itself that says under these conditions, this may be possible. And so I am looking at that myself. I haven't done it yet, but I'm looking at it toward my own Tulsa Corral as a possible approach. But it comes with realizing that some vulnerable people won't be able to do that. And that kicks into your other question, and that is, what about virtual? And I am working on what we're calling this high flex or hybrid or blended scenario, in which if I don't get one of my singers back in a face-to-face world, I will be accommodating that through virtual rehearsal techniques that I've been spent weeks and weeks working on, and I do have an approach to that as well.
Wow.
And I'm suggesting that for schools and colleges, for their choirs, that virtual and pivoting to virtual may be something that you have to do on a moment's notice if we go back into lockdown.
When I was looking at, churches are reopening in many parts of the country, the church choir is sort of a staple of that. Do you anticipate that churches will be able to accommodate these sort of techniques to be able to sing safely?
Well, it is a great question, and because these buildings are sometimes old, or sometimes none of them were probably fitted with filters or ventilation systems that accommodate this. So it will be a analysis that everyone has to do, and I don't know that all will. I mean, frankly, I believe some people will decide that their space just can't allow for this, but it's not based upon the will. It's really whether you can keep your people safe. And if they don't believe that they can create this kind of ventilation and this masked kind of a performance situation, or they don't want to, which I can understand, then I would say they may not be able to, because it is not risk free. There's no one that's saying that it is. And I believe people are going to have to make those choices based upon, whether their building or their venue even has protocols that allow such things. But we are seeing this kind of approach begin to come out, at least in for-profit and businesses and other entities that are outside of our area. I know of marching bands that are back on the field practicing right now, but, it has to be noted they're in an outside scenario and they're doing things to protect their instruments from, from being a spreader. And, of course, the wipe down and the things that the screening that's going on, we didn't mention that, but screening for temperature checks and for people that might have respiratory infections, that has to be laid on top of this as well. So it is a huge number of steps that anyone that tries to go this approach is going to have to do to try to mitigate the problems there. But I think that screening process is going to be part of it as well.
I wanted to ask you very quickly in our last couple of minutes about other types of singing, opera, Broadway performances. Do you think they're going to have the same sort of issues that choral singing will, or will it be perhaps to a lesser extent? Although when I think of opera singing, I think of some of the most forceful, loud singing that would be huge aerosol spreaders.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Rich. I don't think anyone's immune from it. In fact, the fact that Broadway and Met and others have canceled their seasons, it just shows that under a perfect scenario, if you could control all the factors, you think this could be done. But just introduce into that one person who sneezes or one person who stumbles. this is not when you get groups of people together, any kind of combinations can make this thing go out of control. So I don't think, when I look at the number of things that we have to do to control it for safety, you immediately have to say, folks, there's still risk involved. And that's what I'm trying to prepare for if we do have to go virtually. You know, I watched with my family the other night, I watched the production of Hamilton, and I kept thinking, oh, I wish I could be there to see this, instead of, you know, having it mitigated through the media. And when I think of Broadway and I think of opera, I really don't first think of, you know, seeing it through a screen or through a computer screen. So I believe it's going to be as tough on them as it is on us in the choral world. And I think they're facing, as band and orchestra are, and sports teams for that matter, and dance teams, I think we're all sharing this same parameter challenge that because it's not just do number one, two, and three. It's do all 11 steps that I'm looking at, which were the ones I articulated earlier.
Yeah. Well, we hope we can get back to singing together, playing music together, hearing music together real soon.
Yeah.
Are you making plans for maybe an outdoor performance with Tulsa Chorale at this point?
Well, we are having an exciting meeting this weekend, because what I'm going to be doing, we're doing Beethoven's Mass in C in October, and we are going to go at it for a virtual performance. The very first steps I'm going to outline are going to be our recording of it toward a virtual performance. And it's got some exciting dimensions to it. It means that we can take it beyond just the region. I'm going to be doing things that make it more nationally interesting. Also, the multimedia ideas that I have of putting into the final production take it to a new dimension. And I have to say, because we canceled our March concert and we had to do it with a virtual, an online version, I went from having what I would have had if I'd done a live concert of 700 people watch, and we had 4,000 people watch it online. So, you know, I have to look at those potential widening it beyond the insiders as one of the positives that could happen when we go into this kind of approach. So I'm going to look first at a virtual performance, and then I'm really going to seriously look at, could some combination of a virtual and a live be projected if things allow me to do it that way. I mean, I've already asked my board to investigate drive-in theaters as a possibility of, you know, of where we could show it, but also perhaps participate in it with distancing in an outdoor scenario. So that may sound like far-fetched, but I'm seriously investigating that.
It requires lots of innovation to keep the arts going at this particular time. Tim Sharp, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Rich.
Tim Sharp is the artistic director of the Tulsa Chorale, but also the executive director of the American Choral Directors Association, as we look at how concert music can return in a COVID world today on Studio Tulsa. Well, that is Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.